You're listening to a podcast from Bayside Church International.
We have the amazing privilege of having Tony and Kath Rainbow with us this morning. I believe that when we honour people, when we honour ministers well, we get everything that they've got for us. So I just want us to just give them a better welcome than that. Let's welcome Tony and Kath here this morning. Honestly, I've had the privilege of knowing these guys for 20 years, and it's been a long time. We met in a youth camp in Aldinga back in 98, was it? 98, so 19 years, and it's been a wonderful journey knowing these guys ever since, and just watching the fruitfulness of their lives over that 20 years, 19 years. But it's great to have them here with us. You know, we've been challenged, we've been inspired over the last day. Who's loved that? Yeah, some. Yeah, that's good. And I'm sure we're about to get all of that and more in this next session. So why don't you put your hands here then as we welcome Tony to come up and minister with us this morning. Thanks, Tony.
How you doing? Thanks for this opportunity. I don't know if the invite came from Rob or from Chad or for both of you. Jesus, thank you, Lord. It's just so good. Well, for those of you who may not know me, a little bit about our journey. My wife is here. We've been married for 25 years. We just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary, and we got to celebrate that all by ourselves without the kids in Bali, which was just amazing. And we have three children. Our oldest is 18, and her name is Jordan, and she's just finished her matriculation. What is it called? Year 12, and did incredibly well, and just very, very proud of her. Our son, Mitchell, he's 16. He's it in a bit. His name means like God. And because he's my one and only son, he's like Jesus. And because he's here, there, and everywhere, he's like the Holy Spirit. So he's just pretty cool kid and doing great things. And then our youngest, her name is Bailey, or BJ as we call her, and she's 10 years of age. So we had a bit of a gap, and that was planned. Yes, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a surprise. We actually planned that. And we're just very, very blessed of all the great things we have been involved in. To raise three children is the greatest highlight, and it's just a real, real privilege. So that's a little bit about us. We planted our church 23 years ago. We celebrated our 23rd anniversary of the church. Woo! You were there. You were there. And on Tuesday, I think it was Monday or Tuesday of this week, we turned as a church 23, Monday. I said on my post that, do I need to be standing somewhere for that to stop? No? Okay. So if I go there, is it right? What about there? What about there? What about if I start doing the Madison? Is that kind of still working? Cool. Very good. And I came ready to do the Madison thinking that's what you did down here. I thought it was just taking off down in Victor Harbour, but I just know. Anyway, and sorry. That's bad. Not a good start. Sorry about that. Sorry. I love Victor Harbour. I do. I love it. It's awesome. Anyways, 23 years, and as I said in my post, we were young and very inexperienced, didn't really know what we were doing at all, but we did say yes, and there is power in saying yes to God. And again, I look back over the years, I just marvel at His goodness to us as a church. We've just come off the back of a 7-day period of praying and fasting, and we went hardcore. We went like no food, and people asked me, how was it? I was hungry. I'll just be honest with you, I was pretty hungry. And kind of, it's amazing what tricks your body plays on you when you're fasting. But can I just say, to match that was the most beautiful, powerful, intimate experience I've ever had with God. On the Tuesday night, the Wednesday night, and the Thursday night of last week, we came together as a church and we prayed. And I put a big ask out there. I said, church, I would love to see every one of you who calls Victory home attend at least one of these prayer meetings. I wasn't backward in coming forward. I just kind of putting my expectation out there. And people turned out, and we had some of the most incredible prayer meetings that I've been ever. I'm not saying the most incredible. I'm saying the one most incredible that I've been involved in. And God just showed up in so many powerful, beautiful ways. The Tuesday night for me was just special, to say the least. This holy hush came upon the place. But the Thursday was the exact opposite. It was just probably awesome, would probably be a better word to describe it, because there was just indignation. And I think the believers started to realize their authority that they have in Christ, and it just came out. It was like people were like lions. It was just amazing. And then on the Sunday morning, we had our Vision Sunday, and I was just walking around where I would normally walk, just in preparing and praying before the service. And we had Rob with us Sunday night, which was just a real privilege and an incredible conclusion to our series that we were involved in. Not that he knew that, he just kind of tapped into that, which was just a really beautiful thing. But the week was so special for me, and I said to God as I was walking, I started with tears, and tears went to sobbing. It's just weird, like when you're walking and I'm just sobbing. Because I said, thank you for spending time with me. Thank you for spending time with me. When you think about all the wars in the world and all that's going on in the Middle East and terrorism, and that God wants to spend time with me. I just got overwhelmed with gratitude. But no sooner had I said that, I felt God say, no, thank you for spending time with me. And I thought, isn't that more to the point? It's not God spending time with us. That's never in doubt. It's whether we spend time with him. And I just felt God really saw my desperation and my hunger to be with him. And he saw the desperation and the hunger in our church's heart to be with him. And he met with us in ways that is just so beautiful. And so I'm not going to get all, you must be fasting on you. But if you haven't fasted for a while, and maybe you're kind of hungry and desperate and want more of God, maybe it's something you can add to your disciplines again. I know Rob was talking about speaking in tongues. Again, these are old school, but they are still very much required if we're going to have a powerful, intimate, effective relationship with God. I like Paul, I pray every day in tongues. It's not something I used to do. It's not, you know, it's just something that is so incredibly empowering. And if you come to our church, you'll see lights and you'll see LED screens and you'll see smoke machines. And our auditorium's a little bit darker than this. And I thank God for all of that. I think that's part of it, but it never replaces those other things. It's always a both and. And so I'm just so indebted to God and so grateful for him. This morning, I got so many things I'd love to share. Some in the area of leadership, and then some in the area of just personal growth and development and whatever. And I'm just going to go with this. Chad will kind of know where I'm going, because I shared something at a leaders table in the city of Adelaide recently with Phil Pringle and Danny Guglielmucci, and that was an incredible privilege. But what I thought was just a really simple message of some things that I have done in order to stay fresh in ministry. It was received with like overwhelming gratitude. And because as a young teenager, I would look at older Christians, and I've got to be honest with you, I love God and I loved our church and I loved our pastor, but a lot of older Christians, I just didn't like them. I just thought, man, how can you be so miserable? How can you be so sour? You're meant to be older than me. You're meant to be more mature than me. You're meant to be leading the way. You're meant to be giving me hope, but you don't give me much hope. And then I remember at that moment in my teenage years, looking to a 50-year-old version of myself and thinking, what would I want him to look like? And what would I want the young people to think about this 50-year-old version of me? Now, 50-year-old at that time seemed like 1,000 years away. I'm only 2 years off that now. It's like very close. But at the time, it just seemed like, you know, I probably won't even get there. Jesus will come back before then. But, you know, just in case he doesn't. And it seems like he hasn't because I'm still here. And I just started thinking, what would I want to look like? What would I want to sound? What message would I want to present? And I kind of developed at that time a life mantra for myself. And I remember just writing down that I want for me to have the body of a young man, the wisdom of an older man, and the spirit of a godly man. And they're just three things I've just set for myself that I would have. The body of a younger man. And I'm not here to talk about that, but obviously if you want to look after yourself physically, you need to do some physical things. You can pray all you like, but it's a physical issue. It's not just a spiritual issue. And so you can pray for the body of a younger man, but I realized I had to do something about that. And so I had to eat certain things and I had to not eat certain things. and you have to exercise, and it's real simple, you know. Nothing, not rocket science. And I don't think the Bible's that difficult to understand. Yeah. You know, it's just harder to put into practice. And so I just set a course of looking after myself at that level. And then I thought, I want the wisdom of an older man. And I remember even from a young age, people said, you've got an older head on your shoulder. You've got wise head on your shoulders. And I thought, well, here's the secret to that. Do you know what it is? Just hang around older, wiser people. I've always had, and I thank God for this, I've always had older, wiser people. I should start talking to you over here. Hey, kind of just talking to everyone over there. Just take a break a minute. I'll talk over here. And I've always had older, wiser people speaking into my life, because that's how you get wisdom beyond your years, is hanging around those who are wiser than you. It's not rocket science. It's real simple. And so even when it came to buying my first car, this is how practical I want to be today. Even when it came to buying my very first car, I love my dad, and anyone who knows me knows I love my dad, and I really appreciate him. And outside of Jesus, he is my hero. But my dad knows nothing about cars. And so he's a wise man, he's a godly man, but when it comes to cars, he ain't got a clue. And nor do I, for that matter. And so Uncle John across the road, he was incredibly wise when it came to cars. And so as a 16-year-old boy child, whatever I was back then, I asked him if he would take me to look for a car. Now, I had in my mind what I wanted. I wanted a Tirana SLR 5000. And he said to me, based upon your wage and based upon the price of petrol and based upon this and based upon that, here's a better car for you. It's reliable. It's not going to break down. And I just took his advice. And so I ended up not with a Tirana SLR 5000. I ended up with a 1974 Toyota Corona, which was not cool. It wasn't cool. It was just the dumbest, ugliest car ever. But it only cost me $2,500. And it didn't cost me a lot on repairs at all. It's just reliable, because he said Toyotas are reliable. So I didn't know that. So Toyotas are reliable. And I sold that car after 5 years, and I sold it for $2,600. I made $100 on that car, which is kind of cool. But more importantly, I was able to save a deposit for a house. And so by the time I was 19, I bought my first home. And by the time I was 27, I paid it off. And that's before I ever took a wage from the church. When I started taking a wage from the church, people were all skeptical that you own your own home. Where'd you get the money for that? You're ripping the church. I said, no, I actually paid for it before I even started. And it's just because I had an older, wiser person that I actually listened to and took his advice. And I drove around in a really ugly, pathetic car. But it saved me a lot of money and set me good. And so again, who are the older, wiser people in your world, number one? And if you have them, I'd say this, do you listen to them? And then do you actually put into practice what they say? If you want wisdom beyond your years, you've got to have those people in your world. So that's kind of taking care of those two things. But this thing about the spirit of a godly man is what I really want to speak to you about. And so if you are into titles for messages, which I kind of am, because it's kind of like the big overarching theme, I would simply say that what I want to share with you today is about keeping a right spirit. Keeping a right spirit, because when you're in ministry dealing with people, that's easier said than done. So we're going to look at keeping a right spirit. Yeah. As I've mentioned, I've been leading our church for 23 years, and I just want to say this too as a side note. Often we overestimate what God can do, or we can do with God in 5 years. We overestimate that, but we underestimate what God can do in 20 years. And so I believe in the power of longevity and hanging around. And so I thank God for all these churches popping up and being planted. That's just really awesome. But in my heart, I say, are they still going to be around in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? This is not a career choice for me. This is a calling. It's not just a job for me. It's not a vocation. This is a calling. And so we've been going 23 years, and I feel like we're just starting. But as you can imagine, over 23 years, we've seen a few things. We've had the highs and the lows. And if I just look at 2016 alone, there was enough highs and lows in that year. And for those of you who may not know, January of 2016, we started, like many of you do, at the beginning of every year, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. This was going to be a year of this, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that, and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be our best year ever. It's going to be our greatest year ever. We prophesied this, and we prophesied that, and we declared this, and we declared that. Who does that at every year? I do. It's just kind of makes me feel good about myself. And so we did all of that, and come the 22nd of January, everything changed. Because our youth ministry were on their Summerfest summer camp, and it was a beautiful day, and the beautiful day turned into something less than beautiful as these clouds rolled in, storm hit, and no sooner had the storm hit than the storm was over. It just came and went. But in that short period of time, two of our youth members were struck by lightning. One lives. She's my niece. She works in our church to this very day, and she's got a story to tell. She's got supernatural powers now. You touch her, she goes invisible. She's amazing. It's just But the other was Chris Guglielmucci, Danny Guglielmucci's son, and he died instantly. And obviously there's a whole heap of stuff that went around that, and Chris was on our staff, and he was a friend of mine, and so I've got to try and grieve, but more importantly, that moment we had to lead the church through it. And so I'm going through personal grief, but I've got to lead the church through it. And then you've been asked to do the funeral, and there's thousands of people, and it's being beamed in different parts of Australia, and you've got to find something in God in those moments, because there was no Bible college that taught me what to do in those moments. You know, and we just find stuff at that time. And those moments can knock the wind out of you. They can knock the confidence out of you. And that's exactly what the devil wants to do, is knock the wind out of you, and he wants to knock the confidence out of you. And so I found myself, you know, getting through that, and it's kind of like you're a little bit tender, but we got through it. Praise Jesus, we got through it. And we thought, okay, we're gonna build on this, and we're gonna make the most of this moment. And no sooner has we started getting a little bit of momentum off the back of Chris passing, and can I just say this to be sensitive to family members and dear friends of Chris's, it's still very tender and it's still very raw. Chris's birthday would have been yesterday. He would have turned 41 yesterday. We had to go through it all again. All the birthdays, all the anniversaries, they're still there. They're still real. They're still raw. So I don't mean to be insensitive. It's not something we've dealt with and it's in the past. It's something we've dealt with and we are dealing with. And so, but we got through it, praise God. And then not too soon after that, my wife has a health scare. She finds lumps where there shouldn't be lumps. And we're like, wow. This is the year. This is going to be our greatest year. Didn't God hear my prophecy? I mean, like, doesn't he know? Once I prophesy, it has to happen. You know, you're laughing because you know you've done that. And we had to go through that. And it was when we was on a little break. We went on a break in the March, having got through the January and February of Christmas. We're just going to take some time out, have a break. And no sooner we had a break, we're finding out something else. And then in the April, my son Mitchell, who I mentioned earlier, he broke his arm, which in the context of the two other things doesn't seem as serious. But what you need to understand about Mitch is that we prophesied over him, he would never break his arm. And we were so confident that he'd never break his arm because when he was a kid, he always landed on his head. And so we said, and we'd take him to hospital all the time because he'd have a cut here, he'd have a cut there, and we'd get stitches. And we would laugh and joke in hospital saying, well, honey, at least he'll never break an arm. Because for whatever reason, he never got his hands out. He's like, oh, I'm going to fall. Put your hands out. But he never did. Fall out of a tree. I mean, just instinctively, you would think, you'd put, yeah. But no, he'd go, oh, I'm coming down. Just like weird. And so, well, at least he never broke an arm. But guess what? In April, he broke his arm. And so it's just a little thing. You're like, are you kidding me? Again, not as big as the other ones, but it's just still another thing. And then in April, I don't know how many of you know this, but I got rushed to hospital because I was in excruciating pain. And unbeknownst to me, I contracted a blood infection. And I was in hospital for 3 weeks. And what you may not know about me is that I have ADD, LMNOP. I have every letter of the alphabet. And to be in hospital for 3 weeks, it's just like, can do your head in. And so I had to put up with that and endure that. But the food, you know, hospital food, praise Jesus. I mean, like, you know. And then, you know, and again, it was dark time. You know, they did not know what was wrong with me, and because it was to do with the blood, this is what I learned. This sounds really weird. I learned how important the blood is. Apparently, the blood's really important. I didn't know it was that important. I knew it was important, but I didn't know it was that important. And so there was a few days there where my life was in the balance. It was touch and go. And I remember having these dark thoughts. I'm thinking, my gosh, I'm dying. I said to the doctor, I said, I feel like my body's shutting down. He says, well, it is. And so I'm dying. And then I'm thinking, man, our youth pastor died in February. This is what I'm thinking in hospital. Our youth pastor died in February, and their senior pastor is going to die. Then I'm thinking, you know, your mind goes places like, who on earth is going to apply to look after Victory Church? I mean, if I had a died and Chris had died, who would say, oh, don't look after that? No, who wants to look after Victory? No. I mean, no one's going to want to touch this, and the precious people are going to go unpastored and unloved and uncared for, and I'm just like, all this stuff. And but by God's grace, I came through that, and they checked every part of my body, and for the most part, I came up with a clean bill of health, but they did find that I had suffered some damage in my heart valve, and so in September of last year, I had open heart surgery, and had to go through all of that. And so that was just in, that's just in 2016. You know, do you want me, I can go back in 2015, then 2014, and go through 23 years, and you have to face those particular things. But that's not to mention the betrayals. The betrayals. The people pain. Can I just say this about people pain? People pain is greater than any other pain you'll ever experience. When I was almost dying and the incredible pain, I mean, I cannot describe the pain that this abscess on my spine created for me physically, doesn't compare to the people pain, the accusations, the false accusations. And then with social media today, it's amazing that they'll think nothing of just putting it out there for everyone to see. And then you see people in your church that have left your church team up with other people who left your church, but when they were in your church, those two hated each other. But they found common ground now that they've both left your church, and you have to see it displayed on public media. Is that just me, or does that happen in anyone? Is it just because I'm the world's worst leader, or does that happen anywhere else? I mean, and it's just there, and you say, I'm going to stay off social media. And then you think, hang on, you know, we've got some great stories to tell. I want to, you know, and so you get on there again, tentatively, you just kind of, you know, just, is it safe? And then you go on there and it seems to be good. Okay, all that's gone through, it's cleared up, and you know, and then all of a sudden, bang, there's a photo, and oh, you see someone, you know, and is it just me, or is it just me? And you have to face all this, and you have to negotiate all this, and it's not going away. You know, people aren't a problem to be solved, they're a tension to be managed. And that's why we need the power of the Holy Spirit, because it's not going away. I'm convinced, and I'm happy to be wrong in your eyes, but Paul's thorn in his flesh was a relational issue, not a physical one. I could be wrong, and if I am, I lose nothing. But I am convinced, beyond convinced, that the thorn in his flesh was a person and or group of people, and there's enough to prove that. I don't want to go into that right now. And I say that because there's no greater pain than people pain. And I'm convinced one of the biggest reasons why pastors are getting burnt out and no longer in ministry and no longer serving God and no longer wanting a bar of the church is because of people pain. Because they didn't realize just how cruel people can be. We say God loves, you know, our mission is to love God and love people. Again, it's easy to put on the wall. It's really hard to live that out, particularly when people are so cruel and so unkind. And so we've had to negotiate all of that, and then you've got your own mistakes you make. Some of the accusations are actually warranted. Have you ever thought about that? You know, Tony did this and he said that, and well, actually, yeah, I did, and it wasn't my finest moment, and to be honest, they were right. I actually did say that, and I did do that, and you know, but they don't say that you apologize. You just have to, you realize it. And there's those moments of doubt where they're, have I got the goods? Can I actually do this? Because they're not exactly wrong. I really sucked at that moment. I was a terrible leader. And you got all this doubt and all this weight. Am I talking to the right people? I'm just thinking it just got very horrible then, isn't it? And all this can take a toll on your spirit. That's what I'm saying. I'm just painting a picture. And you know what? My stories aren't any better or worse than yours. We've all got them. That's my point. I'm just giving you permission to acknowledge your pain. Because when we acknowledge our pain, it's the start of getting healed. When we deny it and suppress it, so all I'm giving you is license to say, yeah, actually, I've got a story to tell. It's okay. It's okay. It's all right. Proverbs 25 verse 8 says this: whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. In other words, your spirit is your responsibility. And so it's okay to feel the pain. It's okay to have a story to tell. But at the end of the day, you're responsible for your spirit. If you're bitter, if you're twisted, if you're upset, you know what? Things may have come your way to feel a certain way. But at the end of the day, you're responsible for how bitter you are. You're responsible for how disillusioned you are. You are responsible for the way that you respond. And if we have no rule over our own spirit, the Bible says that we are like a defenseless city. And we're powerless against the enemy. You know, in Mark chapter 9, there's this incredible account, and I would imagine everyone in this room would know of it. It's where Jesus handpicks three of his disciples. And to my mathematics, if there's 12 disciples and you pick three, there's nine who didn't get picked. Is that right? And so he takes these three up this mountain, and there Jesus transfigures before them. Elijah and Moses turn up. It's an amazing thing. And Peter just doesn't really know what to do. So he just says, this is awesome. Let's build some shelters. And again, that's a whole preaching in and of itself. Voice of God comes and says, this is my son whom I love. Listen to him. You know, I think that's what's been so powerful for us over this last week of prayer and fasting. It gave us the opportunity to listen, because so often, particularly as men, we want to do. And Peter's like, let's build something, let's do something. He said, no, shut up. Just listen. And our doing comes out of our listening. I think sometimes something's not happening, so we just feel we've got to do something. That's another preach. That's not what I'm actually talking about. They come down the hill. And it's what happens when they come back into camp that I want to pick up on. Jesus and the three, Peter, James, and John, walk into an argument. There's this man who's brought his son, who's incredibly demonized. And this man has come with great hope and expectation that these disciples, these followers of the way, these followers of Jesus can actually help. I've heard you are the way. I've heard that you are a source of help and hope. Hey, I've got a son. He needs my help. I can't help anymore. The best dad in the world. I need something more than my dad's skills. Can you help me? And I believe that that man represents people in our community that are crying out beyond hope for help. And if we as the church don't provide the answer, there is no hope. And so this man, I can't read these accounts and not put myself in the picture. And can I just say this? When we read the stories of Jesus, we're not Jesus in the story. I think sometimes we assume the position and place of Jesus because we know the beginning from the end, because we've read the story. And so we put ourselves in the position of God. We feel like we are the Alpha and the Omega. We know. And we don't identify with the pain of the disciples when they see Jesus on the cross. Because like, guys, just relax. He raises again on the third day. Don't you know that? But had we been there? And so the moment to get the most out of the Bible is put yourself in it, but put yourself in it in the right place. And so you've got to understand, we're the disciples. We're the doubting Thomases in the story. We're not Jesus. And I know that because we all doubt and we all have fears and we all have struggles. And so these disciples can't help this man. And Jesus effectively says, bring the boy to me. Jesus releases this young man from this oppression, these demons, and afterwards the nine come and ask a question, and it's a great question to ask. They said, why could we not do what you did? Do you ever stop and ask yourself, why can't we do what Jesus did when Jesus said we would do more than he did? And Jesus effectively goes on to say, this kind of comes out only through prayer and fasting. And so I've got two questions to ask myself. Either, why were they not praying and fasting? Or, why were their prayers hindered? Because I don't imagine when you've got a guy that's demonized, I don't know about you, when you see someone who's just freaking out, you tend to automatically just pray. You know, just out of fear. Oh my gosh, Jesus, help me. So Jesus didn't say they weren't praying. So either they weren't praying or they were, but something was hindering their prayers. And it's worth asking ourselves, what was hindering their prayers? And again, I can't prove this, and I've never heard this spoken on before. This is my theory. This is my thought. and it comes out of knowing me really well and human nature really well. I wonder if this is what took place that day as to what made them so ineffective and so powerless. Because here's the interesting thing. Three chapters earlier, in Mark chapter 6, these guys went out two by two and they healed people and they released demons from people. Yeah? The same guys. Now there's nine of them and only one boy. And yet before they went out two by two, they had power that they'd somehow lost. And I have to ask myself, how is that possible? And I wonder if the moment Peter, James and John were picked and they walked off into the distance, I wonder what started amongst the nine. I wonder if they were starting to think, hey, is it just me or... No, they'd only do it when Jesus is out of earshot. They'd wait till he can't hear anything. And I just wonder if they're saying, hey, is it just you? Is anyone just a little bit ticked that Peter, the guy who's always swearing, got to go with Jesus? And did any of you notice when Peter was walking off into the distance, Peter was like... Now, you say, oh, that would never happen. See, we read the Bible as if they were these holy figures. They were teenage boys, and I know what teenage boys do. I've got one in my home. They can be cheeky, and they can be naughty, and they can be downright rude. And I just wonder if Peter and James and John are, ha, suckers. Which doesn't make them right either, by the way. And I wonder if they started saying, who do they think they are? What's so good about Peter, James and John that I don't have? And then they start questioning Jesus. Now we're on tender ground. Doesn't Jesus see what Peter's like? Doesn't Jesus know what we know about him? And all I know is at that moment, something shifted. And I wonder if in God's economy, he didn't send this young man to them just to highlight where they were at. See, when Adam was found guilty of sinning, God asked him a question. God is all-knowing. This is the art of godly confrontation. Just ask questions. And he says, Adam, where are you? Not that God lost him, but what he's trying to get him to do is show where he's at. The question could go, Adam, where are you at? Yesterday we were in the cool of the evening, we were talking, we were laughing, we were joking, and now you're hiding. Where are you? What happened? What changed? Something shifts in our spirit. Something shifts in our heart. And it's really easy for us just to get judgmental and critical. And these disciples had lost something they once had, and that was power, which comes through intimacy. They'd lost it because something had entered their heart, something had entered their spirit. And I believe that you and I need to be people that keep a godly spirit, a clean spirit, a right heart. Otherwise, all our prayers and all our theology are rendered useless. Yeah, we talk a lot about the grace of God. And I've got to be honest with you, last year I grew in my understanding of the grace of God in exponential ways. I wasn't a novice on the subject, but I'm telling you, I went deep with God and God showed me some things through what I went through. And my understanding of the grace of God went to a whole nother level. And I just am so indebted to the grace of God. But you know, there are some things that can forfeit grace as well. You know, God's grace is here. It's available. But you can say, I can do that because I'm under grace. And that statement alone can disqualify you from living in that grace. Because pride denies grace. And so the moment you say, I can do that because I'm under grace, that's pride you're operating in. And the Bible says that God resists the proud. And so, yes, there's grace available for you, but you're not receiving it because actually your pride's stopping you. Jonah chapter 2, verse 8 says, those that cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace of God that could be theirs. So every day there's grace that could be ours for every situation we face, for every circumstance we face, there is grace available. You got betrayed. Hey, there's grace available for that. Chris, your youth pastor dies. You know what? There's grace. I feel like God's saying, I've got grace for that. I've got grace for that. I've got grace for you. I know it's horrible. I know you're hurting. I know there's pain. I know you're grieving. But Tony, if you look to me and just let go of the why me, what's happening, just look to me. and I can give you my grace. It's there. It's available. But pride denies grace. Envy denies grace. Bad attitudes and cynical attitudes and an ungodly, unclean spirit denies grace that could be yours. It's there. It's always available. But it doesn't mean we're always living in it. And I believe at that moment, and I want to be really kind to the nine because I'll see them one day. And I don't stand from the position of power. I am one of the nine. I probably would have started the flipping rumors. I know me. I'm not judging the nine. I'm saying I'm part of the nine. I'm saying their problem is my problem. And when you recognize your problem, that's the beginning of finding the answer. My heart was able to be fixed because they knew where the problem was. It's no good putting my leg in a cast if my heart needs fixing. But because I knew where the problem was, they could get in and fix it. And I realized, no judgment of the nine, I'm one of the nine. And again, if I'm honest, I'm probably starting the thing. I'm probably saying, hey, did anyone see Peter? Did you see that? I'm there. I'm with them. No judgment. But I realized the power of keeping a clean attitude. And as a teenage boy, when I looked at myself when I was 50, I thought, I just don't want to have an unclean, critical, bitter spirit. I just didn't want to be like a lot of the older Christians. And I wasn't being young, brash, or arrogant. I was actually picking up something. I was picking up a wounded, critical spirit. See, it's not just being faithful, hanging around, well, 23 years, I'm still here. It's not that. The person in the story that only received one talent, he was faithful. He was there at the end, but he got condemned because he wasn't fruitful, because he hid his talent. And we can hide our talent and just say, well, I'm still here. It's not enough just to be there. We want to be there with the right spirit. We want to be there with joy. I want to be like David, running at the giant with a spring in my step, smile on my face, glint in my eye, sling in my hand, declaring I'm going to cut your head off and I don't even have a knife. I want to be that guy. I do. I want to be that guy. I never forget when I was 19 years of age, there was this couple in our church and they were 32. And again, at 19, 32 seemed old. And I was telling him, just like I am now, I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And I was quoting Smith Wigglesworth, and I was quoting Catherine Coleman, and all these great people who've gone before me, and I want to be that. And I thought, well, when you're our age, oh, it's like, they shouldn't have said that. They shouldn't have said that. It's like a red rag to a bull. And I went to this person, said, I will never be like you when I'm your age. It was not the kindest thing I've ever done. I don't even know if I was right, but I felt if I could describe how I felt God felt about me that day, I felt like I'd say, wrong, but I like your attitude. Have you ever had those moments where you're like, son, you've got to change your ways, but I like your attitude. Don't lose the attitude, but we'll work on your ways. And I think that's why God could use people like Peter, because he's just swearing, he's doing stupid things, and he's hiding, he's But God's looking at him like, wow, we've got a way to go. And on a bad day, they might have been up there thinking, did we pick the right guy? I don't know, but just don't believe that. It's like, but I don't want to get old. I can't stop the aging process. I'm not 19 anymore. But I still feel like that young kid with a glint in my eye and a smile on my face. And I have every reason, just like you do, to give up. I have every reason to hand over the church and give up on... I do. But I say to Rob, I don't know what it is. I don't know if I'm just stupid. I don't know if I'm just too simple for most people's arguments. But there are some things I settled as a teenager. Paul says, I know, I believe, I'm persuaded, and I'm committed. Yeah. And there are some things I know, I believe, I'm persuaded, and I'm committed. And they're really simple stuff. You know, some things that I settled a long time ago is this. Nobody has ever offended me as much as I've offended God. And yet he forgives me. And that went deep. I know that to be true. I believe it. I'm persuaded. And I'm committed to that. And that means no matter what happens to me, It doesn't matter what happens to me. I'm going to settle that forgiveness is the answer. See, to me, the testimony of our 23 years is not the 23 years. It's the fact that I still feel fresh. I feel like we're just starting. And that goes against my nature. Because I am really impatient. You know, I am so flippant impatient. If you know me, you would know that I'm really impatient. And imagine me saying, well, this is the way you made me, God. It's just my personality. No, no, no. I believe there's grace for my impatience. And so I go, Lord, by nature, I am what I am. But grace changes me. Grace gives me what I struggle to do in my own strength. And here's the miracle of our testimony. I'm an impatient man, but I have a track record of patience. Because of the grace of God. No boast. I cannot boast. I cannot boast in that. My track record, 23 years, how do you do that? I'm like, yeah, how do you do that? Because you know what? Is there any impatient people here? Okay. Well, I reckon some of the honest ones, some aren't, but that's fine. But I reckon if we had a competition, you would find I'm more impatient than you. That's how impatient I am. That's my point. But I have a track record of patience. What is that? It's every day. Lord, when I did that post, I burst into tears because that's not me. God, you're so good. And whatever you're struggling with, I know there's grace for you. But a bad attitude, a critical spirit, an ungodly attitude will forfeit what could be yours. And so I settled some things. No one's offended me. No one. No one. My brother's no longer on staff with us. It got ugly and it's still not the best. We lost probably 200, 300 people over the last 2 years. Just messy, ugly, horrible. Don't like it. Wish it didn't happen. Sucks to be me sometimes. But you know what? God's grace is bigger than that. And I've heard God say, you know what? I know you don't like it. But there's grace. There's grace. So someone's sick and dying in your world, sucks. I hate it. I hate seeing sickness. I hate it. I hate the pain it causes. I hate it. But I have to believe God. See, our theology, God doesn't want to be studied, people. He wants to be known. He doesn't want to be studied. He wants to be known. And do you know him? Because to know him is to love him. One of the greatest gifts my dad gave me, he gave me many, but he lived in a loveless marriage. My mum passed away 3 years ago, and I watched him as a young man. Me being a young man, watching my dad, and him navigate a woman that did not return love to him. It doesn't matter what. Have you ever tried to play tennis with someone who doesn't want to play with you? It's like... Nothing comes back. That was my dad's existence. And he's a red-blooded, testosterone-filled man. How do you do that? And he taught me something. What it is to know God. My dad's not a scholar. He's not a theologian. But he would rival most theologians for his intimate knowledge of who Jesus is. And I'd see him when I'd come home from school as a young boy. I'd just see him on the back lawn, just worshiping God, just having a moment with God. Either that or kill my wife, but a moment with God. And I so appreciated it. And he'd say this is the thing. He'd say, Tony, in light of eternity, what's it matter? When we've been there 10,000 years, I'm telling you, what I'm going through today is going to pale into insignificance. And that just rubbed off on me. I just believe that. And so I have another simple thought on life. It's this. Backslide to what? That's another one of my values. Tony, have you ever felt like giving up? Every other day. Seriously. Every other day. I feel like giving up lots of times. I'm done. No, I'm done. But backslide? Where am I going to go? If I go to the heavens, he's there. If I go below the earth, he's there. If I go to the east, he's there. Where do you backslide to, people? Where do you run away from God exactly? Here we talk about Adam. He was hiding behind the bush. There is no behind to God. Because if you go behind the bush, he's there. It's no longer behind the bush. I'm here. He's like, hello? Where? I mean, this is like elementary, but it's gone deep. This stuff, I just crack myself up. I have fun, so much fun in my head. It's just like, I do. I just think, where do you go? Have you ever played hide and seek with young kids? They're like, okay, I'm counting. And you're 10, 9, 3. And they're like, 2. And they panic, 1. And they're like, and as a dad, you're walking around, saying, oh, where are they? And they're going, and they think you can't see them. And you're just being gracious, just to, because as a dad, you're having a bit of fun with it. And you don't want to kill the fun. And then you're like, we're like that with God. And I just think, backslide to what, people? What are you backslide to? I've given up on God. That's stupid. It may be sin, but it works for me. We've got to keep a clean spirit. We've got to keep a good attitude. And so when it comes to keeping right spirit, when do I need to finish? Probably out of time. Wow, there's... All right. Can I talk about four things real quick? I can just mention them and done with it, or I can just elaborate on some of them. But four things have really helped me keep a right spirit. And they're so simple, and I don't mean to insult your intelligence, you're all smart people. But our smarts aren't helping us. We've got to grab this stuff. And so for me, some things that have been really effective in me keeping a right spirit... being impatient and all those things that I've mentioned already. The first thing is just keep it real. When it comes to keeping a right spirit, keep it real. The Bible says that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and the word truth means the sum total of all reality. Whatever you're feeling, whatever he knows. And we try and put on a mask and say, no, I'm not. It's just better off saying, I'm really ticked today, Lord. I'm so frustrated today, Lord. I'm frustrated with him. I'm frustrated with her. I'm frustrated with me. We've got to keep it real. You can't deal with anything without it first getting real. If you're jealous, and I know I'm jealous, now I know what to repent of. Yeah. See, if we don't get real, we'll never get healed. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So we say, oh, that person, we're going to enter into a season where we're going to do a new series called Courageous Prayers. And one of my favourite prayers to pray is this, and it takes courage, because it's not one of those safe ones, bless me, heal me, give me. They're the safe ones, all good, nothing wrong with them, but they're safe. But this one takes courage. Search me, search my heart, oh God, see if there's any offensive way in me, because we love bringing a list of what's wrong in others. Hey Lord, I think you might need a check on that person. He said, I'll deal with that. What about you? And if we would let God do surgery in our hearts, he'd reveal some things about us. And what he reveals, he heals. So he doesn't reveal these things to us to shame us. He wants to heal us. When the doctor said to me, Tony, one of your heart valves has been damaged, the mitral valve. I didn't even know I had a mitral valve. Apparently I do. Apparently you do. Apparently everyone does. I didn't even know it was there. He said, it's been damaged. And we really suggest we operate sooner rather than later. I didn't like that news. I wish I could just put my head in the sand and not have to deal with it. But can I say this? I'm so glad that I was made aware of it, because now I could do something about it. That's why you've got to get real. And the way we get real is by praying courageous prayers. Search my heart, O God. See if there's any offensive way in me. Because jealousy, bitterness, pride, envy, hurt is going to forfeit the grace that could be mine. And I don't need God to deal with that person. I need His grace. See, when Paul prayed three times to remove this thorn, he learned something that day. And I've learned something from his situation. It's not the absence of the thorn. It's the presence of His grace is what we need. We're so busy saying, get rid of this thing, instead of give me what I need for this thing. My mum died, and the relationship between my mum and dad never changed. 56 flipping years. You know what the testimony is? My dad's attitude. That's the victory. That's the crown. Never changed for him. But God changed him every day. Because he made it about getting what he needed as opposed to some God changing someone. If you're having a bad day, it's okay. A bad day is just a bad day. Just don't make a bad day a bad week, a bad month, a bad year. Bad life. I have terrible days. Kath and I, I'll be honest with you, we had a fight coming down here. She was wrong, I was right. You know, one of those, we were tired, we were trying to get there, the traffic, and I just, it was my fault, I was just being an idiot. And I said, Kath, right now we can just make this all day, or we just deal, I'm sorry. And she said she was sorry, and I said, yes, you needed to say that. No. It just happens. Life gets in the way of our best intentions. We've just got to recognize it. Do you love Jesus? I love Jesus. He didn't give up on us so quick. I just love that. You know, when you're struggling, struggle is a proof of life. You know, when someone's been kidnapped, they want proof of life. And so I didn't know that because of movies. At least I think that's what happens. I've seen the movies. And they want proof of life. And so they'll hear the voice of the person to make sure they're still alive. They're struggling, but they're still alive. And if they're still alive, it's worth the fight. Struggle says that you haven't been conquered. Struggle says you haven't given up. Struggle says you haven't given in. Struggle said you haven't given up and given in to the way you feel, but you're trusting God for something bigger and something better. The struggle's not the problem. Struggle's proof that you're still alive and that you're still fighting. Abraham, Romans chapter 4, says he faced the facts that his body was as good as dead, yet did not waver through unbelief concerning the promises of God, but was fully convinced that God was able to do that which he had promised. See, faith can face the facts. And the fact is, I feel, this sucks. This is horrible. I hate this. How, Lord? You can do that. But don't waver in unbelief. You know, the season we just went through, I was saying to Rob, again, whether I'm just stupid or whether it's something to do with what I'm talking about today, everything we went through last year, honestly, before God, in my worst day, I never asked, why me? I just didn't. Maybe I'm stupid. Just never asked, why me? And I came back to the church after getting out of hospital, and I told the church that, and I said, you know what? God so did a work on me. His grace went so deep in me. I actually had this thought, and thank God that He entrusted me to go through this. Because if someone's going to show the world how to suffer well, it should be your people. We should have a hand up saying, look, if someone's going to show the world who's how to suffer, pick me. I don't mean to be morbid, but really. Really. You know, I said this to every nurse that came and visited me. I said, thank you for looking after me. Because I know even in my pain, they get abused all the time. And they were so grateful and so indebted to what I bought. And it was just a few little words. And I told every nurse, and there were varying degrees of how good the nurses were, but I was just so grateful. So thank you. And I just thought it was like a term of endearment for looking after me. And they were. I was in their hands. So they said, thank you for looking after me. because I heard down the road someone shouting and cursing and mocking. And nurses are heroes. And I want them to know that. So when you're sick, we have an incredible privileged position to show people and showcase what it is to suffer. And no one did it better than Jesus. Hung on the cross, he said, forgive them. I'm like, it just does my head in. I want to know this Jesus who knows how to forgive in the midst of his pain. And I thought, I remember lying in hospital saying, I can say, why me? Or I can say, I have an opportunity to be Jesus. And there's no comparison. I mean, I'm just on a hospital bed. I'm in a comfortable hospital bed. I'm not naked on a cross. I haven't been beaten. I'm on a comfortable hospital bed getting 24/7 treatment. It doesn't even compare. But I do have an opportunity to showcase kindness in my suffering and be something like Jesus. And it starts with keeping it real. Keep it big, number two. We serve a big God, Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20. He's a God who's able to do immeasurably more above and beyond what we ask, dream, hope, or imagine. I love that. Probably a verse I quote most days. I just love it. He's able, not me. I'm not able. I just suck at a lot of things. But he doesn't. He's amazing. He's awesome. He's able to do what I can't do and immeasurably more of it. You know, so let's keep our conversations big. Let's keep our picture big. Let's do big things. The devil wants to reduce you, and I know the assignment on me for 2016 was to reduce my vision, to reduce my language, to reduce... And when I came up out of this sickness in hospital, I said to the devil, I said, you're going to wish you had killed me. I'm going to so use this against you. And here I am today doing exactly that. I'm personally sick of telling the story. The only reason I'm telling it is because I want to rub the devil's nose in it. I really do. Because I sense hope rising. I sense joy rising. And that's what the devil wants to stop. He wants to keep you small. And he wants the conversations to be small. Can you imagine the nine... Instead of having a small conversation, had a big conversation. Hey guys, I don't know about you, but the fact that we weren't picked suggests that there's something on their lives that's not on our lives, which means they have more responsibility than us, which means more danger and more hardship, and it means that they're at the front of the army and they're going to get mocked and ridiculed. I know how tough my life is now, but to be up front is even tougher. Hey, I think we need to pray for Peter. I think we need to pray for James. I think we need to pray for John. Imagine if they started praying for those guys and then that man with the demonized son walked into that meeting. I think Jesus would not have come down into an argument, but to a celebration for this young man. You've got to keep your conversations big. In your connect groups, I didn't understand the message today. Shut up. Seriously. And I'm not talking as a pastor. I'm talking as a believer. When I was 18, I was asked to lead worship. And I don't sing and I don't play an instrument. So I just felt like they're mocking me. But anyway, that's fine. But I do know something. I'm a worshiper and I'm a leader, and that's what you need to be, a worship leader. So I thought, I'll go for it. And so, plus the songs back then were a little bit kinder than they are today. I can't do what Chad does. Isn't he wonderful? We sang, "This is the day. Hey, this is the day." So I could do that. But we used to meet in the little creche area in our little church that we were a part of, and we'd get in a circle and we'd pray and we'd do the religious thing by way of preparing for the meeting. So we would pray, and I would always kind of just rally the troops and give them a little bit of a motivational spiel about how good God is, and it's awesome, and keep it big. And this woman, she interrupts me mid Martin Luther King Jr. speech. And she says, "The trouble is with you, Tony, you expect too much." And just something came over me. And I never forget again. I don't know what it is with the pointing the finger in the face, but it seems to be my go-to zone. I don't know. I said, "How dare you?" I said, "How dare you tell me that I expect too much of a God who can do immeasurably more above and beyond all I ask, dream, hope, or even imagine? How dare you?" Now, does anyone else in this room think I expect too much? It's just quiet. I said, "Well, let's go out there and worship Jesus. This is the day that the Lord has made." And I'll never forget Her name was Cheryl. I won't use her last name. Her name was Cheryl. And she was singing there, you know, face looking like the back end of a cat, you know. Anyway. Keep it big. Keep it great. We serve a great God. We sing that song, Matt Redman, How Great Is Our God? That's not a question. I think we turn that song into a question. Lying in hospital, how great are you? Not very great. See, we don't even like hearing those things because it sounds like blasphemy, but that's what we think all the time. I'm challenging what goes on in our head. It's not a question. It's never a question. The greatness of God is never in question. The greatness of God is constant and consistent and always the same. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He was great, is great, and forever shall be great. This is not a question. It's a statement and a declaration of faith on the greatness of God. It's a statement. Have you ever been to a game of football and it's just an incredible great game and you can't quite put it to words? It's like, oh man, how great was that? That's what this song is implying. And when we sing it, we're like, oh, how great is God? It's amazing. Our youth pastor died, but the church rose, the church rallied, and I've never seen such love before. How great is that? It's flipping awesome. And then our pastor's wife gets struck down with a few lumps straight off the back of Chris, but they're still in church, and they're still in faith, and they're still smiling in 23 years. How great's that? It's awesome. Then he gets a flipping, what's it, blood infection and heart, and he's still in faith. That's great. And that's in you. Because Christ, the hope of glory, lives in you. It's great. He's not just great for me. He's great. And if I have a bad attitude, he's still great. And if I want to give up on him, he's still great. Working your backside too, it doesn't change nothing. Your little sulk and your little pout doesn't change anything. He's great. God is great. And the last one, number four, keep it fun. So keep it real. Keep it big. Keep it great. Keep it fun. And in brackets, if you're taking notes, put next to fun, with a little bit of naughty. You're actually going to do that. You got to keep it fun. Life just throws too many curveballs and gets too serious too quickly. And we have to choose to have fun. I don't feel like it. We were invited out to the Fringe on Monday night. It was off the back of a big weekend and Vision Sunday. And we were going to go to a show to see a comedian, which we did, but it was 9:30. And I'm saying, Kath, what do you organise that for? I don't want to do that. And she said, shut up. You're going to love it. Oh, I don't go. You're not very kind. And she said, shut up. We're just going to go. And we did. We went out. We had dinner. We went to some friends. Had a great laugh. Had a great night. And I said to Kath, holding her hand, walking down Rundle Street, I said, thanks for making me come. Because we can just become reclusive. We can just become, it's just not going to be bothered. I'm so glad I got people in my world who say, shut up, just come. You've got to keep it fun. If you can laugh about something in a year's time, you can laugh about it today. Have you ever thought about that? There's things that we're so upset about, we laugh about. Well, if you can laugh about it in a year's time, you can probably laugh about it today if you think about it. I was so politically incorrect with Chris. I said things you shouldn't say when someone just died, but it brought a lightness to the room. You know, I'll never forget day two of Chris passing. And I said, well, all of you who knew Chris knew that he always thought he was a bit of a know-it-all. Well, guess what? Now he is. You know, too soon? No, I just broke something. It's the time we see in part, but there'll be time we've fully known. So he's in heaven, he sees it, you know. That's where I was going with that anyway. Got to see the funny side. I'll tell one story and we're done. Chad knows where I'm going with this. But when I was in hospital, lots of doctors, and this one doctor comes in. He asked me what I do. He was the only doctor who asked me what I do. I said, well, I'm a minister, lead a church called Victory Church. He goes, oh, Victory Church. I go to Edge Church. I said, oh, great. And so we got chatting away. And as we're chatting, he starts putting on rubber gloves. And I'm thinking, that can't be good. And I'm not past 50, so I haven't had any of those checks yet. And so I'm laying there, and he's talking, and he's getting closer. And then he says, just lie over. Gets me in the fetal position. And starts putting some gel on his fingers. I don't want to get into too much detail, but probably way too much detail. And at that moment, what you've got to understand with Chris dying, this is a man in the will of God, serving God, on staff, on a youth camp. He's not Jonah. He's not running away. How does this mess with the theology? Under old covenant, God saves Jonah, who's running away in disobedience, and God saves him. Chris, in the will of God, serving God on a youth camp in front of young people that can just mess them forever, takes him. Is there room in your theology for that? I just know him. I know how kind he is. I know he has a plan and a purpose. And so my knowledge of him overrides what I don't understand about him. Because I don't understand it. I still don't have an answer for it. I'm just glad I know him. Because that brings the peace. And so anyway, back to my story. This guy, and I'm thinking at that moment I can lie there. I think I can go, I'm a pastor. I've been serving 22 years. Why is this happening to me? Or I can just choose to see the funny side of it, because it's just crazy. And so as he's about to insert his fingers where they shouldn't be, under the banner of being a doctor, I'm lying there, and as he's doing his thing, his internal check, they call it, I said to him, at Victory Church, we just shake hands. Why do I do that? I'm not trying to gross you out. I'm trying to highlight stuff's going to happen to you. You're not going to like it. You just got to learn to laugh at it, because life can be cruel and throws you some curveballs. And so just keep it fun. Keep church fun. People will always leave. They'll always come. They'll always go. They'll hate your guts and they'll love you and then they hate you. It just happens. It just happens. I don't know how to finish this. I'm going to hand over to someone. I'm done.
Yeah, I've been there. Well, folks, what's so wonderful about that is that you can flourish no matter what the circumstances. It's not about surviving. It's about flourishing in the kingdom of God with the purposes of God on your life, keeping a good attitude, keeping a good spirit, and just seeing the blessing of God continuing to flow through your life. Who's encouraged? Who feels a little bit healthier? Because, laughter's like a medicine, so I feel a little bit healthier today.
This has been a podcast from Bayside Church International. Thanks for listening.